Hello and welcome to D2C Podcast. Today we're pulling up a stool with Viper Industrial CEO Dane Rush, who noticed the modifications his father made to his workshop chair that improved its comfort and functionality and recognized a massive opportunity to update a century-old industry standard. Now an eight-figure powerhouse with customers like Tesla, SpaceX, Delta, and Honda, Dane reflects on the Viper journey and dishes about all the marketing strategies propelling them to last year a 112 year-over-year revenue growth. Viper is what happens when you combine American innovation, craftsmanship, and family heritage to create a truly problem-solving design and an amazing brand. Listen and you'll take away key insights like the importance of investing early, how Pilot House helped fuel Viper's biggest ever Q4 on Meta Ads, how Viper's strategic TV approach is paying massive dividends top of funnel, and why Made in America is a principle Viper continues to bank on. Pull up a chair, let's look under the hood, and on with the show.
There's tough times and there's your doomsdayers and, oh, there's tough times ahead, or recession or depression, or even COVID. Those are the greatest opportunities to just put your head down and keep going. Literally ignore all the noise, because next thing you know, you're going to poke your head up after you just gave it a year and a half of just absolutely killer mindset. And you'll be like, look at what we just built while everybody else just crumbled. We always find it where the greatest opportunities to expand are in those when everybody else is scared and they lay off a bunch of people or they get doomsdayer mindset, where we're like, hey, if we don't do anything, we're going to fail. Let's say we do everything we possibly can and take massive risks and we fail. We're failing both ways. Why not take the biggest risk?
If you haven't yet used Motion, the creative analytics platform used by top e-com and D2C brands like Fiori, True Classic, The Farmer's Dog, Hexclad, and hundreds more to ship winning ads, here's why you should try it out. Everyone knows that the right creative is the number one lever for success with paid ads. That's how you make money. But consistently shipping new winning creative? You're gonna need your media buyers and your creative teams on the same page. Right now, you're probably spending hours tiring away going back and forth between Google Sheets and your ad platforms and tools, and then spending even more time plugging it all into different decks for the rest of your team. In a perfect world, you could have an elegant way to combine visual assets and performance data so media buyers can save time and creative teams can get the details they need to make great ads all in one place. And that's where Motion comes in. In seconds, you can build powerful visual reports using data from your ad accounts. You can monitor your performance metrics and see your visual assets in the same platform. No need to go back and forth across multiple apps. You'll finally have media buyers and creative teams working together to create and scale your next big winner. If you're ready to learn how the best D2C and e-commerce brands use Motion to ship winning Meta, TikTok, and YouTube ads, book a demo today or start a free trial at motionapp.com/DTC. Even better, Motion offers a monthly subscription plan so you can dodge those annoying annual contracts. Get 50% off your first month when you use the link motionapp.com/DTC on signup. Dane, welcome to the D2C podcast. Super glad to have you here. Why did you build Viper?
A little story behind it is I actually didn't build the product myself. It was actually my brother and I's father that came up with the idea. So it was our dad, Chris Rush. He was always in the garage and my brother and I were his right-hand man. You know, we're always helping him through the crazy projects he was doing, from these awesome car builds, working alongside Jesse James on motorcycles or custom-made choppers, to building his own Pete and Polt airplane. And we were always there. We're always in the garage watching how he would work. And we'd see all the pain points he would have with the tools he was using. And this was at a point where a lot of the stuff he was buying was, you know, from overseas, and it was just kind of cheaply made. And a few years ago, about 4.5 years ago, he fell off his chair. And my brother and I were like, we've got to do something about this. So he designed his own chair, and which was the OG Viper chair. And I went up, and this was after college. I graduated college. I saw the chair and I told myself, I'm like, that thing is badass. And I could see, I knew a need for it in the garage industry because we were always there. And
what made it different? What made the first prototype different?
Yeah, it was the robust build of it. It was the wide base, so to prevent tipping. It was the massive casters, so you could roll over cords, zip ties, cracks. And it was a super thick, comfortable seat. So that was really the key recipe. So what we did was we just diagnosed all the problems. Like, hey, these are the 10 problems that people are having when they're using these chairs. And we made a product that solved it. And I didn't have a job lined up after college. So I was like, okay, let's give this a shot. If it works, it works. If not, hired a buddy to take some photos, built a website on Webflow to start, and then we moved to Shopify. And then slowly but surely, it just built into the 3.5 years that we are in business for.
I'm someone who spent a lot of time on keyboards, a lot less time in garages. How does one go about making a workbench, like a stool? Is it literally like metal fabrication and leather work? Like, what went into that prototype?
Yeah, the prototype, I'll have to send you a picture of it. It's hilarious to see how far we've gone in the product development. He had a buddy in the industry that he knew did upholstery for motorcycles and stuff. So he contacted him to make the seat. The wheels, the casters he bought at a rummage sale when him and my mom were actually visiting me at college. So we went to a rummage sale when we were in college. But he found these casters. He's like, I could use this for the prototype that I'm making. And then the metal legs, he just made himself with all the machines that he had at his previous organization.
So cool. So you throw yourself into this. How long did it take you to get a prototype made? A Mark II.
Mark II, I would say that's one thing with my dad is you plant a seed in his mind and he won't let it go until he has it done. So from that version to the next prototype, because I saw it, I'm like, hey, this is cool. This isn't going to sell online. Like, we need to make this thing look cooler and still keep all the functionality. And within a few days, he had a prototype made or designed, and then give it another week, he had actually a fully built prototype ready to go. Then that birthed it. I'm like, this thing looks like something the Iron Man would use. Like, it looks cool. It looks sexy. It's something that people are going to buy and want to buy.
So what was your next move?
So we went from there. So like I said, I hired a local buddy. I think I paid him like $150 to take some photos, built a Webflow site. So Webflow is similar to like Shopify, but it's more custom built. And I started using some advertising. My buddy actually worked for him for free. And I did some design work on the side while he ran my ads. So that helped kind of build up the social presence of it. And then...
And this is with your dad fabricating them still? Or is this, had you built out your internal process yet?
No, this is all... I'm living in a 400 square foot apartment and driving an hour up to my dad's shop to every day to figure this stuff out. But yeah, then I used my dad. So my dad had a big presence in the industry. So he's, like I said, he worked alongside like Jesse James, some big fabricators. So he had a presence already. And I just tapped into it. I'm like, hey, can you contact these guys? I'll make them a prototype and I'll send it to them just for them to make a post on social media to help build the presence of this thing. And I think we had like 5 or 6 people that still are one of our big partnerships post about it that really help take it off. Then we have people like, hey, I saw it on Cornfield Customs post. I want one of these. And then it was at a point where it's like, okay, we need to find, I can't do this out of my apartment in your garage anymore. He's retired at the point, and he's like, I don't really want to do this. I want to be retired. So moved it to like a 2,500 square foot apartment, which is another story of that is the guy didn't believe in it. So he's like, hey, we'll go. I'm not going to sign a year lease with you. He's like, we'll go month to month lease because I don't think you guys are going to make it. Like, no one's going to pay $400 for a shop chair. And for me, I take stuff like that. I plant it in my head and that's a seed. And I go to it every single day.
It's like
day.
Reggie Miller used to carry nickels under his wristbands because his dad told him he wouldn't amount to a dime or something like that.
There you go. That's all. Dude.
For spite.
Yeah, exactly. And people are like, oh, you shouldn't build this thing to prove somebody wrong. And I attest to that in a different way of like, I think any way that you can find motivation in this company or this environment, you have to find it because this entrepreneur space is tough, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So take me back to the ads. So you get your buddy to run these ads right off the, like, did you see traction right away? Did you see like that there was a need for this right away or what did it take to start seeing that traction on the ad side?
Yeah. We got a lot of pushback in the beginning. So to give you an example, this was a product that has never been changed or innovated in this industry forever. So they have your cheap little, I don't want to bash any companies, but you got your cheap little red top with the tiny little base that's made overseas. Everybody can picture it in their head. If they're listening, they know what I'm talking about. That was the only chair that people were using because that was all that there was. You know, there was never anything that somebody came in and innovated on. So that product right there was $40 and ours was $400. And in this demographic, you have a lot of people that are more price sensitive. So we got a lot of pushback in the beginning of, why would I pay $400 for a chair? Because no one has it. So nobody can feel it, or there's no
price sensitive on some things, but willing to lay out for quality in a lot of other areas, whether it's their tool cabinets or their tools themselves, right?
Right. So that was our biggest hurdle or barrier to entry into the market, was getting product out there, because nobody saw pictures or reviews. Like, we didn't have any social proof that it was worth $400, you know? So I was trying to take as many videos as I possibly could, but that still wasn't doing the justice. And then it just took time. It took one person by one person by one person to slowly and organically spread the word, which really helped us build the base of what we have right now.
And being, I imagine, like with the, like you met, your dad was probably working with Jesse James before he became a reality TV show star even, or like, but that whole thing happened where there's this whole proliferation of content around this idea of custom stuff. And it sounds like you got your product into a lot of these key places as well.
Exactly. Yeah. And that helped us tremendously. Honestly, we wouldn't be where we're at if it wasn't for my dad and the connections that he had. I mean, he thought of the product, you know, and my brother and I just took it and ran. But he's still alongside us. He's got that engineering mind. He just knows all the cumbersome products in the shop, in the garage. He's been in it for 30 plus years. So he knows what he wants and what other people want. So he's been a tremendous help for where we are right now and where we're about to go.
Let's talk about that a little bit. What can you say about you know, this is just a 3-year-old business. Where what can you say about how big it's gotten and where you want to go?
I think we grew, is 112% from last year to this year. We just had the biggest Black Friday, Cyber Monday sale that we've ever experienced. And we have a team of, I think, 42 right now. And by the end of this year, we want to be around 70 and double the amount of revenue as well. But yeah, that's just in 3.5 to 4 years, which is nuts. But it took us a long time in the beginning, like I said, to build that credibility, probably a year of just truly building that credibility of getting the chairs out there. One major thing that helped us do a trade shows. We go to trade shows where people can touch and feel it, because you can't touch and feel on a website. As much, you can have as much product videos as you can, all this stuff. But when you actually get these people in real life, say, hey, I saw you on Facebook and I knew you guys were coming to this trade show. Now they can touch and feel it, like, damn, this is way higher quality than I even imagined. So that really helped. So the growth was like, yeah, it looks like 4 years was really fast, but man, it took us a while to build that credibility. And really the explosive growth has just been in the last year and a half.
And has that been mostly fueled by ads now that you've kind of set the base, or what do you attribute the explosive growth to?
Yeah, the explosive growth is a few things of, one, the product sells itself. And then when you have good marketing behind it also really helps. So we brought, one thing that also helps is, especially with the Black Friday sale, was bringing on the Pilot House team. Pilot House team absolutely crushed it, dude. I love all the guys out there, and they are truly an extension to our current team. But yeah, so when you top, it's a great talking point, is when you topple a great product on top of good marketing, followed by great customer service and quick lead times, you have everything you need to be a successful company and have that growth. To where if you miss any of those, let's say you have great marketing and you have great customer service, but your product sucks, slowly but surely the word's going to get out there that the product's not worth the money and that it's not good. So you have to have all those facets in order to really scale.
The other thing you have that you haven't touched on is the brand and the brand authenticity. You know, you have that real brand story that every brand wants. And then you put your money where your mouth is with that by making it a fully American-made manufactured product, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's one massive selling point to our brand and to who we're selling to also, is they love American-made products and they're willing to pay for it too. And that's one thing with the current industry. It's been so heavily pushed on by overseas products because e-commerce became such a cool thing to do for everybody. And you have all these e-commerce classes and how to build an e-commerce brand in 1 year. And all that is just reselling overseas products. And that's where the American made theme really, really helps us. And one thing that we're really going to stick to.
Super cool. I want to get into some of the nitty gritty about Black Friday, but I was also curious, have you guys tested television?
We have. Yeah, television has really been a great avenue for prospecting for us. And we see that when you have it's almost like an omni-channel. So you have your TV, Then you're hitting them with the direct marketing. So you have like your digital ads and then your email campaign set up, Google, and then you have your social media presence as well. So when you can really hit somebody on TV, you can bring all these people in at a mass amount onto the website. Now you have them on the advertising. Essentially, what we're using TV as is our prospecting tool instead of Facebook. And it works. It works really well. We see it too when we tested it, because we're like, okay, let's do a month of TV and let's see how it affects us. And then let's go a month off. And it's a dramatic difference of how many people that are calling in saying, hey, I saw you on TV. And that just stops. So
that's so cool. It's true also, top of funnel. We call Facebook top of funnel, but really Facebook collapses the funnel. You get top and bottom all together in a direct marketing channel, whereas TV, and it'll have that halo effect too, right? It'll increase conversion rates from anyone who's had that legitimacy by seeing it on TV.
Absolutely. And one thing that we failed at in the beginning with TV is, it typically takes our buyer 6 to 9 months to buy. And what we expected with TV, we're spending so much money on it where we didn't see the results right away and we panicked and we stopped TV. I'm like, this isn't working. We're not getting the sales. Then you would see in about 3 months, all those people that saw it on TV 3 months ago started to buy through retargeting, emails, social, everything. Yep. Then I saw it. I'm like, damn, we could have those 3 months. We missed a ton, but you have to learn, you know?
Great insight. And then when you say TV, what do you mean? Are you talking about, are these network buys or is this linear TV? How did you define TV for this test?
Yeah, good question. So we haven't gone into, what do they call it? OTP or like your Netflix, Hulu. We haven't tapped into that quite yet. So this is more like Fox News, more national channels, Motor Trend, et cetera.
Traditional
TV. So that's where we're excited as we're January 26th, we're going to be launching more OTB campaigns for the first time, which we think is going to open up an entirely new avenue. Because I put myself in the shoes. I don't watch traditional TV. I go to Hulu, Netflix, whatever, for any shows that I'm watching. And the targeting that these agencies can do now on the TV side is it's still super targeted compared to like Facebook and Google targeting as well. It's pretty cool.
So again, we'll get into it on Black Friday, but the name of the game on Meta is, feeding the creative beast. What did you do for creative on TV? How many variations have you tried, and what overall strategy with the creative did you take with TV?
Yeah, we only had, and that's where, again, we've only had one creative running on TV, which again is another thing that we learned, is you have to have just as much creative as you have on digital, you have to have on TV as well. So Now that we know that, we have an entire team just for TV, an entire team just for your digital ads, because they're two separate ads too. Your digital is more, say, TikTok trendy-ish, you know, more kind of salesy, where your TV needs to be much higher quality, more cinematic, much cleaner, more professional. Because if you have a national TV and it looks like, you know, it was shot on an iPhone, people lose credibility right away. So it needs to be.
Yeah, because they're expecting that.
Correct. Exactly. So this is something that we're just about to launch, like I said, in about 2 weeks, is actually having detailed creative for different TV markets.
Super smart. And then literally, is it narrative driven? Like the ones that you have run with, is it narrative driven? Is it sort of like Apple porn kind of, right? Where you're shooting the thing in different angles and cool lights. Like what's the actual content of it?
The content is more of the chair and use talking about. So we have, it's funny. It's more of like your old school marketing. Like we got an old guy in his back like this, and like it's a big X because he's on like an old crappy chair. But it's more talking about the pain points. Like, are you somebody that has back pain or knee pain in the shop and sick of falling over?
100%.
Well, if you are, then here's the Viper chair. You know, it's more of like you're kind of clickbaity, but it works because that's the audience that's watching it. You know?
Yeah. You got to do that thing where you're like, do you ever try to work like this? And it shows people doing really awkward things. And it's in black and white. And a big X comes on the screen.
That's what we do. I'll send
yeah,
you.
Yeah, that's
I'll,
exactly it. Yeah.
And it rips though. So it crushes because yeah, that's the audience that's the kind of content that they're used to. So understanding the content and what you're producing is like one of the biggest things that we've realized that has helped our growth is don't show people content that they can't relate to. You're wasting money. Yeah.
All right, let's shift gears to digital now. I guess you're engaged polyglots across a couple of different fronts here, but what do you like, what do you think, what was the anatomy of your biggest Black Friday ever that going into it this year?
Black Friday was nuts. The biggest like thing that it really contributed to the growth was what we did in October. And you can talk to the guys on this too, because my brother and I flew to Canada to meet with them to kind of come up with a game plan. But their main goal was in October to just build up the biggest pool that we possibly can. And it might not be the most efficient month that we've ever had. However, what that's doing is getting you ready for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. And at first I was a little hesitant to that, because I'm like, well, we still need to be efficient while we're still building up the pool. And they're like, trust me, it's going to work. So I'm like, all right, you guys got my faith. Let's do it. And so what they did, they just prospected majority of the time through October, built up that pool of potential buyers, and then smoked it in November and December. And when I say smoked it, like absolutely crushed it. And it was to the point where I was constantly on a call with Amar, and he's like, hey, here's our numbers. What should I do? I'm like, crank it up more. Keep going. More. And it kept producing results, efficient results too. And it's like, keep going. Don't stop. Because I don't want to look back at this in January and be like, damn, I wish we would have won even more. You know,
like those TV 2 months there, you know,
exactly.
It's a little easier with attribution on Meta to stay the course, but good on you. And then what was the offer? Like, cause I imagine you're not a discount brand. I imagine you're a brand that doesn't discount hardly ever. So what was the offer that slayed?
Yeah. So the offer was, I think it was $50 off all chairs plus free shipping, which is a great deal, cause free shipping for our boxes, it's not like a little USPS box that's like $6 a ship. Our box is massive. Like it's average cost is like, yeah, $40 some to ship. So us covering that is saving the customer technically $100 in total for this sale. But one thing with us too is we're guaranteeing it delivered by Christmas, and we hit that too, even with the amount of orders that came in.
Nice.
But a clever thing we did too was put if your order didn't come by Christmas, we had a PDF attached to it that they could print off and put underneath the tree, just so they at least had something that they could present. Nice. To you know, it kind of it was like a CYA, just so we could at least get them something underneath the tree if we couldn't deliver on time.
Nice option there. So the offer rocked. But how has 2024 been? Have you been experiencing any hangover in 2024 so far?
No. So we know that 2024, people always come off the sale high. They spend all their money. You know, New Year's rolls around. People are kind of broke. And that's, you have to understand that flow. Where we use January as a month to really take a deep breath. All right, where were the breaking points internally? You know, what was it on the sales side, customer service side, operations? Where do we start cracking? We change it. We make different systems, different processes in order to establish the opportunity to have higher growth in the next year. Otherwise, if you don't make those changes, you're never going to be able to go bigger than you did the last year, because you're just going to keep cracking. So we really use January for a cool down month to figure out our shit internally.
And I guess if you want to make leaps and bounds, you can't stay always in the same trodden paths, right? You got to take shots. And you mentioned TV as something that you're investing in more heavily. What else that to help you hit your scale goals are you kind of thinking about in 2024?
Yeah, so 2024, we're becoming more. One simple way to say it is we're doing less, but we're doing things better. So last year, we always wanted to do so many different things, but that requires so much creative and planning, and it created a lot of misorganization internally. So instead, we have a few new products launching, and instead of doing 6 new products, we have 3. So we cut that in half. Like, let's make these 3 the biggest launches we've ever had. Make sure we have the content, schedules, everything ready to go. Not only that, but we're going more brand focused. So even with our TV campaigns, like Father's Day, we have plans to do more of like your sales promotion side, but we also have creative that'll be more of like your emotional, sentimental side. So really taking 2 different brand approaches to test it. Does the emotional side hit home more with people, or does the, hey, buy now, get $50 off Father's Day hit better? And then just really, really getting the killers that we need internally to have a 4X month for Black Friday, Cyber Monday this year.
Have you tested the content that works well on TV on digital? Have you tested the more traditional infomercially direct response content?
We did, and it rips on YouTube. So we notice it's good on YouTube. And again, that was only one creative, so I don't have the best information on that. But yeah, I was super excited to test all this new creative that we have coming out on digital marketing too, or on digital advertising.
And then what are you guys doing? You mentioned the sort of organic influencers you have that you help set the tone with your dad. What else on the sort of like influencer or creator front are you guys thinking about?
So we have a brand director. His name's Alex. So Alex is the absolute killer of building relationships with influencers and big brands. So what we have is an opportunity for doing almost like car builds. So we want to do car builds, get these influencers in that are also doing their car builds, get sponsors in from like, say, Nitto Tires or Leverack, and start using their products while we're documenting everything for short form content and long form content. But partnerships is really one big thing that we're going to be tapping more into in 2024, and doing limited product launches. So whether it's a custom Viper chair, a custom Viper product, or we do a custom Viper product of theirs and do a partnership or collaboration in that way. But that is, influencers is definitely one thing that we want to be pushing heavy in 2024, to really get more on that organic side. I want to be less reliant on the digital.
Your social proof on your site, like some of the brands that you've worked with already, like you've outfitted probably a lot of the coolest workshops in the US basically. And that just looks so good on the brand on your website, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. SpaceX, Tesla, Honda, some of the biggest brands out there. And that's another thing I forgot to mention as well, is we got a whole new, almost like a rebrand coming soon as well. So just like a brand cleanup. What's our color theme? What's our messaging to the customers? Who's our main target demographic? How do we talk to them? What do our ads look like? And we're doing a whole entire new website rebuild as well. So what you see right now is going to be 10 times better. It's funny. We actually just got wireframes done, sent to us last night, and it looks insane.
Is there anything functional you need to change about the website, or do you really view it mainly as a more branding and sort of efficiency of design exercise?
More of like a design exercise, I would say. What you see right now is just what I thought would help the customer in purchasing. I'm in no way a CRO expert. So now we have a CRO team that's going to be putting the website together. They know where to put buttons, how to message, what they want to see, what they want to hear, product imagery, like everything that I don't know. So here's a better way to answer is 2024 is a year where we're going to get the professionals in and let them do what they're good at instead of us guessing.
And you said this earlier, you like to get the best in every job too, right? Like, you know, Pilot House can do TV, but we're known for, you know, our Meta, our Google, our email, right?
Exactly.
I think that's a really smart way to think about it.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Pilot House team is freaking do their killers.
We just got to hang out more. I got to go to a Green Bay game. We got to get you over to a Canucks game while they're at the top of the league here.
Yeah, dude.
How many products are you? How many chairs? I know you're currently in the chairs. I know you have a fan, but you're going to break into a new area that we'll talk about soon. But how many chair options do you have now from the original one that you created?
Yeah, we have around 6 different options right now. Anything from like your lay down creeper to go underneath a car to an elevated chair to work at a high workstation. And it ranges in use. I mean, we have chairs for detailers. If you need to detail low panels on a car, tires, whatever it may be. If you need to do vinyl or window tinting, we have the elevated model that you can use it for. If you're a welder, a fabricator, literally a chair for any use or any activity that you can think of.
Is it a one and done purchase with a lot of people, or are people coming back and kitting out all their different sitting options in their workshop?
Typically what we see is people will buy one chair just to test it out. Obviously, it's a high price point, so people want to see actually what it's all about. Then once they engage with our brand, they see our marketing, they feel the product, they use it, they put it together. Anywhere down to even the bolts and the assembly guide that we have, it's the greatest experience and the greatest product that is out there. Once they see that, then they're like, okay, this is definitely something I want to buy more of. And yeah, they'll all fit their entire shop. So we have teams that'll buy one just to test, and then they'll buy, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 of them.
Unreal. You mentioned in the pre-interview, we don't talk a ton about operations and sort of team building or team structures, but you mentioned that you have a specific meeting that you guys run. I don't know if it's monthly or weekly. I compared it to Festivus and the airing of grievances, but how do you describe your meeting structure there?
So we implemented an EOS, it's called the EOS meeting. It's an entrepreneur operating system. And it's something that I learned off the book of Traction. And essentially what it is you have every 90 days you meet with your leadership team that you put together, and you're going over what are our main goals for those 90 days for the entire year, 3-year plan and 5-year plan, just to make sure that all your executive level are on the same page. Because if we're all firing at different cylinders, we're not going towards the same goal. And once we implemented that, we had our first meeting in December, and it's been completely game changer. We have our entire team, especially the manager team, that understand where we're going, which gives us the ability to say no. I feel like too many brands will always be a yes man because they want to get the sale or whatever it may be. But you have to get extremely focused and be able to say no, hey, this isn't something that we have planned for this year, or it's not in the budget, or this, that, the other, which has helped us a ton, because that was in the past. In 2023, we were yes men.
Yeah. Give me an example of something you said yes to that you shouldn't have.
Let's say like a new product, you know, it was a product for an industry that we weren't even in. So to give you an example, it was a drummer stool. You know, somebody approached us to make them a drummer stool, and we're like, yeah, hey, cool. This person's big. They're on a big band. Let's make them a drummer stool. It essentially flopped. Like, he got it. Wasn't really what he wanted, and this, that, and the other. And it's like, we didn't make a stool for drummers. Like, that's not the industry. So that's something that diluted our focus. That took a ton of time away from our main vision, because we made a whole entire new product for one person in an industry that we never even were meant to be in. So we got super dialed on who is our core demographic. That's who we're going towards. During our marketing, if we find another group that's a high buyer, say females come in and they're buying it for sewing, and that becomes one of our main demographics, okay, then we can veer off into that industry. But moving into an industry without any knowledge is just a distraction.
100%. Drummers don't usually have money. You know, maybe celebrity drummers got money, but otherwise, like if you have if you got a shop, you're gonna need a chair. But a lot of drummers probably just sitting on buckets, probably, right? No offense if I got any drummers in the audience here, and you got lots of cash.
You get some hate mail.
Get some hate mail from the drummers. Nice, man. This is gonna be sweet. How big can this bad boy get? What are your goals with Viper over the next years? What are you thinking?
Honestly, dude, it can be as big as we want. That's one thing that anybody listening, I want you to really understand how big the US market is. You know, we get asked all the time of, hey, when are you going international? When are you doing this? And when you take a step back and you look at the quantity of products that you sold. And we just did this the other day. So let's just say a company sold 50,000 units. Go to a Packer game, and in that one area, there's 80,000 people. In that one little area, there's 80,000 people. So you sold to, you know, 3/4 of it. Now look at the entire country. Look at how much opportunity that there is. So I look at it in the space that we're in, is the garage industry is massive, and it's only growing as well. And we have some business partners that are in a much more niche industry that have been around for 25, 30 years selling the same products, and they have never ran into a competitor twice because the market is just so big. So honestly, we can make this thing as big as we possibly can. And I want to be the go-to company for American-made goods for anything that you need in the garage.
Unreal. And a lot of the incumbents probably are not as progressive in their mindset with how aggressive you are, how tuned in you are with digital marketing, right? So I think the opportunity to disrupt the whole space is huge.
Absolutely. So you got your big brands, you got your Milwaukee, DeWalt, and this goes for anyone listening in an industry that already has some big dogs in there, is you have to be the scrappy dog, and there's always opportunity to take market share. Because you have, say, Milwaukee Tools, DeWalt, they might be on chapter 50. You might be on chapter 2, but they might put the book down. So you can just keep catching up and up and up. And next thing you know, you're going to be level with them at chapter 50. You're just going to take over the market. Yeah, it's going to take 15, 20 years. It's not going to happen overnight. But that's exactly it. Is we can truly make this thing as big as we can. Whatever I'm in a plane, and you should do this too, look outside the window when you're about to land. Look at all the little houses and the buildings and everything. And you're just landing in one city, in that little area in the country. there's thousands of those cities throughout the entire country. Like, this market is so much bigger than people can even realize.
And the opportunity is immense. I just feel grateful, even in you know, in these challenging economic times that we're headed into, just we're still in this like vanguard of the opportunity, right? Like there's tech, there are a lot of tech layoffs happening, which is sad. And but I just feel like because we're in this industry where A, you're driving so much of your own fortunes through, you know, making purchases actually happen. I feel lucky to be in this industry for sure, where you have a lot more, you have like more control over your fate in some ways.
Dude, my brother and I talk about this all the time, is when there's tough times and there's your doomsdayers and, oh, there's tough times ahead, or recession or depression. Those are the greatest, even COVID, those are the greatest opportunities to just put your head down and keep going and like literally ignore all the noise. Because next thing you know, you're going to poke your head up after you just gave it a year and a half of just absolutely killer mindset. And you're going to be like, look at what we just built while everybody else just crumbled. And now you're going to be on top of the dog. We always find it where the greatest opportunities to expand are in those when everybody else is scared and they lay off a bunch of people, or they get doomsdayer mindset, where we're like, hey, if we don't do anything, we're going to fail. Let's say we do everything we possibly can and take massive risks and we fail. We're failing both ways. Why not take the biggest risk? You know,
100%. And listen to the D2C podcast. You were bringing up earlier how, like, as you were starting this business, you were listening to the D2C podcast, hearing to the aspirational people who are doing it. Right? That's my favorite part about this whole thing, is I get to connect week in, week out with all these people who are like, we were talking about how much you got to love the game, the hustle, in a way, right? Like, you have a deep connection to your product because it's from your father and you know you're making people's lives better. But what you really love is the hustle, the game, the people you're doing it with. Like, it's such Absolutely. such a privilege, right?
Absolutely. The journey is the greatest thing, dude. Being able to look back at where you were a year ago and see where you are now and where you can take it in a year from now. But you're exactly right, dude. I have to give you that. Your podcast like got me through a lot of stuff and gave me so many more ideas listening to all these business owners that were in the next position. And it's like, oh, that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. Cool. I'm going to try that. And dude, you're helping a ton of people. And I love everything that you're doing.
Thanks, brother. Well, you are now part of the canon of helpers. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today, man. We're going to definitely have to stay in touch. Going to have to get you back, hear more about your TV campaigns. And yeah, we're definitely going to make some cross-cultural sports interchanges happen. Yeah. It's going to be amazing. Are you a hockey fan at all?
I'm not. No, sorry.
Well, we will. We'll correct that when you come. We'll get to a Vancouver game and we'll—
Absolutely. One quick thing before we go is, anybody listen to this, because this was the same position that I was in when I was listening to this, is— we're at a much smaller point than we are now when I was listening to your podcast. And I was listening to the podcast of when you had somebody on there that was, I think they're doing like $40 or $50 million of revenue. And when you look at somebody at that point, you can feel like you're so far behind. But again, like I said before, anybody listening that's listening to us and be like, damn, they're so far ahead of us, look at it this way, is we might be on, like I said before, we might be on chapter 40, you might be on chapter 2. We're in different themes. That doesn't mean that you can't get to this point. I would always be a person where I would get discouraged. I'd be like, damn, dude, I feel like I'm just behind. I'm not doing something right. Keep going every single day and you will get there. I promise.
Elvis Costello says, every day you write the book. And it's funny. It was Seth Rogen. I was just listening to a clip the other day. He's like, if you don't quit, you might succeed. If you quit, you definitely won't succeed.
Exactly.
So I think the book chapter is a really great way to think about it. It's just like, and that concept of like, when you're building something, especially when it starts to work, like, you don't really look down. You don't, no. You just sort of, you look up like a year later and you're like, holy shit, I have accomplished something. But it's almost Absolutely. Like you can know when you're winning, when you're just like, when you're not even focused on how it looks externally, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I can't express that enough. Again, I was in that exact shoes. I was like, it sucks, because it's like, damn, these guys are in 100,000 square foot facility and we're in like a 2,500 square foot facility. It's like, am I ever going to get there? I promise you keep going, you will. Absolutely.
One last question. Will you have to, if you hit your goals this year, will you have to upgrade your manufacturing facility?
We will.
Or should you be able to get there in this?
No, unfortunately, we are pretty maxed out in our current facility. So we have 45,000 square feet here. And yeah, we're pretty much at the brim. We have some space in the office to grow, but out in the facility with the manufacturing, the assembly line, all the warehousing, she's pretty snug out there. So if this year continues to grow like we have planned, we might either have to double in size or look to build our own facility.
Nice. Well, we'll catch up when you do, and I know what stools you'll have in the workshop.
Absolutely.
You got to have make podcaster. I know you'd say no to that. You got to make a special podcaster chair. But we have less money than drummers.
So Nick Baer with BPN Performance, he actually did buy some chairs from us. I think he posted on his Instagram that he was using them for his podcast room. I'm not sure if he did, but we actually use it in our podcast room that we had. So nice. They're comfortable, and I use it for my office chair too. So yes, you could use it for different uses. We're just not going to move into every different industry.
All right, man. We'll leave it there. We could talk all day. If people want to get in touch with you, where do you think they want to learn more about your journey? We get a lot of outreach from that podcast. You recommend they email you, look you up on LinkedIn. What do you think?
Yeah. Follow me on Instagram. I'm going to be promoting a lot on Instagram. My handle is Dane Rush, DaneRush. Same thing on LinkedIn. I'm going to be posting a lot of content on there of how to build a business like this. And my handle again, I think it's just Dane Rush, DaneRush.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can do that right now at directtoconsumer.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.